putting aside the fact that futurist shouldn't be a title, anyone can have much less one that you give to yourself. Like 3 or 4 years ago, he gave a keynote speech on how NFTs were the future and how we should all be excited by them. And how airlines should go all in on issuing NFTs, because you may as well just make the money and like it's fine. Don't worry about the operating your airplanes. It's a little bit like the credit card schemes and whatever.
He got one client, AirBaltic.
He was the keynote speaker again this year talking about how AI is the future.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 591 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, today joined by Mr. Seth Miller, Mr. Foz Mamoon, and of Points Travel Festival and Every Passport Stamp, the Facebook group, Stefan Krzyzewski. How you doing, Stefan?
Thank you. I haven't had a chance to be on since pre-pandemic. Glad to be back.
Has it been that long?
It has. We had, I think it was maybe 2019, we had a China travel episode talking about a country that would in a few months be closed to so many visitors for years. So I think the audience and the Patreons that got the bonus even were able to apply nothing. maybe they enjoyed the episode anyway.
I mean, I like to think that most of our content is useless to most people, so that sort of plays into it.
Oh, you're underselling us, Seth. Come on now.
Now that celebrity roasts are all the trend, I have a deep memory catalog of DLD moments that I can put together to get trigger Seth into
that can't be good.
I'm a little worried he knows our history better than we do, guys.
That's the thing. Someone was asking me the other day. A neighbor of mine found out that I do the podcast. She's like, "Well, like what? When did it start?" And I'm like, "Honestly, I don't know."
Years ago, order, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was like we started a travel show that was really focused on airline points a long, long time ago. She's like, "But how many years?" I'm like, I couldn't tell you.
This is a great start. We're points hoarders. You know, did you get a new credit card? What card is that? No, I didn't. I haven't gotten a card in 5 years. You know, let's lean into the aviation side a little harder in the rebrand.
Yep, I think so. Yep. News wise, Seth, Bermuda.
I think it's been 12 years. Just for the record,
12. Wow.
Okay. And I've never redeemed my free beer. I've been a paying Patreon for a chunk of time, but never tracked you guys down in the wild for that.
We do pay out. I had one guy refuse to accept it, and I was trying to explain to him he had to. It didn't go well, but
tell me about Bermuda, Seth. What's going on?
I have to correct the record. May 10th, 2012. Points order, episode 1.
This is 13 years.
14 years.
Yeah. Because we were every other week for a while. And then at some point, Stephen was like, I think we should go to weekly. I think we'll get better traction that way. It'll be a good idea. And
here we are.
Probably not wrong, but also maybe not right.
Seth was Wandering Airman. Foz was UPGRD.com. And so many change and transition. But the love of flying is continues.
Well, here. So Bermuda. Bermuda-based, interesting operation, runs Embraer E-Jets. You may recall them from their original pitch was going to be an all-business class Embraer E-Jet. I remember that was like basically, it was actually a cool idea. They were going to take the 2-2 seating layout and do sort of what JSX does on their E-145s on the two side, where basically the second seat becomes a tray table / storage area, so you get all that extra space. Never happened. They don't talk about that anymore, which is a bummer. But either way, they also started as all E-175s. Now they've got some E-90s, so some bigger planes. But it was always just Bermuda to the U.S., and then they added Bermuda to Canada, East Coast stuff. I want to say last year or the year before, they did some U.S. to other Caribbean markets. And I mostly remember this because I think one of my wife's cousins or something emailed and was like, hey, have you ever heard of this airline? Can we fly them to Anguilla? And I'm like, yeah, they're fine. They're normal. Like, it'll be okay. And they didn't get back to me. So I assume they took the trip and it was fine. But U.S. to Turks and Caicos, to Belize. Anguilla is back from Newark and BWI and Boston plus St. Petersburg, Tampa now. Bermuda, Fort Lauderdale is coming in, and they're also adding Guatemala City via Belize, which is a super interesting one, like tech stop situation. And I think they might have local traffic rights based on what I'm seeing published.
This could be the most obscure. Foz says, well, of course, the traffic for this corporate contract between between Belize and Guatemala City.
I'm thinking this is like the Cape Verde Airlines, where there's just a huge population somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like there's that much of an expat community for Belize, maybe Guatemala, but
how do you think they've secured rights to Turks and Caicos from the U.S. and Belize from the U.S.? Are those just open airports?
I can try to look it up. I believe Turks and Caicos still considered a British protectorate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is Bermuda. They have rights to fly from any UK airport to anywhere in the U.S., I think.
Huh. But then Belize? I mean, Belize isn't part... I mean, Belize was a protectorate at one point. I don't think it is anymore.
We have an open skies agreement with Belize.
Okay.
So if we have an open skies with them, and we have an open skies with Bermuda, so that would work.
Yeah.
Or with UK. So, yeah, there's some transitive property stuff going on. But I think Turks and Caicos might be because of that.
Boston to Guatemala City on an E-190.
Via Belize.
Okay, so Boston to Belize. That's a long flight on an E-190.
But 2-2 is far better than 3-3.
Agreed. Agreed.
Right.
I think we have some new lines to get.
Yeah, and we see Porter doing Toronto to West Coast.
True.
On Embraer's, right? So seems to be working.
Yeah, it's 2,000 miles, so 4.5-ish hours.
Yeah, Belize is further east than you think, I guess.
All of South America is further east than you think.
Details.
Very true.
Aruba is east of New York City.
That's bizarre.
That's always what I come back to. We'll remember that from trying to plan Crazy Around the World with, because you could do Amsterdam to Aruba. And then if you did a westbound, you could do that and then come back to the United States.
It's crazy.
a trivia I just heard on a news show this week was which U.S. Atlantic coast state and which Pacific coast state have a time zone that is only 1 hour apart from each other.
Atlantic coast state.
It's just part of two different states. One is actually in the Mountain Time Zone, and one is in Central.
Oh, which ones are?
Seth should be able, from his family history, guess the Atlantic one.
So part of Florida is in fact in a Central Time Zone,
yes.
Like Pensacola is, even though it's not the Atlantic part of it. That is,
And then Idaho has Oregon has Mountain Time Zones.
There you go,
on the east side, yeah.
Look at that, representing right here in this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Foz seems to have no fixed address. So
I have an address somewhere.
At our old New York meetups, I'm going home to, and it'd be always like a muffled, you know, it might be Pennsylvania, it might be San Diego, it might be.
It's wherever he can get from Newark.
Or Philadelphia.
Or Philadelphia.
Yeah, no, I give Bermuda Air props for that's maybe the wrong word. Some credit for trying this. They are jets. For trying some of these routes. They're interesting. They're also moving their Orlando service to Sanford, which is the Allegiant hub down there out of Orlando International. So that's an interesting one.
But is there enough demand for Turks and Caicos, Belize, and Anguilla for all these places?
They certainly seem to think so.
Just because an airline thinks there's demand doesn't actually mean there is demand.
Are they doing it daily, I guess, is the question.
I think all of it's less than daily.
So that I could see, because it's like 76 to 90 or 110 people.
Yeah, I mean, it's even less than that. So Boston, Belize, I'm looking at the month of December. There's only 4 flights, and it's late in the year. So like twice a week.
I think that's doable. I think that's doable, Foss.
So if you miss your flight or it cancels, you wait 4 days?
Or if the airline goes out of business, you never get
home. Well, then you just, they pull a Sun Country on you.
Yeah, the season ends and you go fucking Mexico.
Yeah.
Good luck, fellas.
We're going to fly the plane back empty. You guys, good luck.
I mean, that is a key thing. Like, I mean, I guess a lot of people go for like week-long vacations to these places.
Yeah.
And so you just pick it up the next week. But if you miss it or something happens, you've got to wait another 3 or 4 days. That's a big deal.
And I guess one of the questions would be like in the case of Newark with United and JetBlue with Boston, let's say they won't load a lot more flights just to match the pricing.
JetBlue doesn't have the power anymore to do that. They don't have the cash to burn.
I would say they don't have the power. They don't have the cash to burn.
to add flights.
But if there's demand. Capacity, but
if there's demand, sure. Right? Like they'll fly where there's demand. If the demand isn't there, that's where they won't fly.
And I will say, I'm thinking back to, you guys remember when Norwegian played similar route authorities games? They flew to Martinique and Guadeloupe because technically they're France.
Mm-hmm.
They said it'd BWI and I think Boston and JFK maybe. And I remember talking to someone at JetBlue about that at the time. And the comment was, yeah, we've looked at all of those. We know what the numbers are. We are happy to let them burn that cash. And so, you know, I would assume that in this case, JetBlue has looked at these numbers and is happy to let them burn the cash.
I could see United doing it, though, just out of spite.
Yeah.
Yeah. United has the planes and the capacity to be able to throw in.
And the cash.
Yeah. And the cash. I mean, United already does Turks and Caicos from Newark.
Yeah. I'm intrigued, though, also, SFB, the bid in Orlando, also the Tampa service is actually St. Petersburg, PIE, which is the St. Petersburg airport, which is also an Allegiant base or major hub. I didn't realize either of those had international clearance facilities.
Processing. But are these pre-clearance airports by chance?
Belize is not.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Maybe they wheel in a trailer to clear people.
Bermuda is, but Belize is not.
Right.
So, Lauderdale is.
Sanford has the ability to process international flights, right?
Apparently. Allegiant doesn't have international service. That's one of their things. And it was one of the reasons they wanted the Viva Aerobus, which is now just Viva joint ventures. They wanted all the Mexico stuff to come online. And so that was part of that joint venture, which is derailed by the Delta Air Mexico mess with Mexico International Airport, Mexico City. But it's surprising to me. Obviously they do. I just didn't know that they did.
Did it fly to Sanford at one point?
Did TUI?
TUI definitely. Yeah, TUI definitely did.
So there you go. I know they go to Melbourne now instead, but
that's very fitting. TUI going to Sanford is the most on brand thing they could do.
I watched a BA flight land at Sanford once.
Well, it probably was a diversion though, right?
I don't think so. I think it was a charter.
Okay. I will say, for all, you know, we can shit on Sanford all we want. It's not as convenient to get into Orlando. It is a very convenient, tiny little airport.
I mean, it looks nice. I don't see how they process. They may have to actually, like, hold off on a gate area and process coming out of the gate.
Yeah.
Looking at the, because it doesn't actually look like they have a, it doesn't look like they actually have a processing facility.
Thinking of a route like the Bermuda Air, I'm curious. Is there in their numbers or routes to substantiate the theory that a lot of travelers would like to get, say, from Europe to other parts of the Americas without transiting the U.S. in the current period of time? I mean, that, you know, if it's, you know, if there's to the FAS corporate stuff, if there's two incredibly wealthy Bermuda-based lawyers, you know, that every week need to fly to Guatemala City, you know, and are willing to pay, is, you know, and they just don't want to go through the U.S. Is that showing up in any noticeable, verifiable way?
In theory, yes. The only non-US Canada route via Bermuda is Turks and Caicos.
You know, I was thinking of something like didn't China Eastern recently launch, what, Shanghai to Auckland to Santiago de Chile, somewhere.
They do Santiago and Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
They made a big deal that it was like the quote unquote longest flight, but it had a tech stop in
Auckland.
And like maybe local traffic rights, and wasn't sure if you got off the plane or not, but it was a weird claim to be the longest. I was looking at,
but in the Chinese marketing, it was very specific. You know, you do not need to go through the U.S. I mean,
it's a big deal these days.
Yeah.
I was looking at, Bangkok back to the U.S. in November, and I once again found myself staring at the Addis to New York City options on Ethiopian with a tech stop in either Lome or Abidjan, and it was 17 or 18 hours. And it just remains baffling to me that from, you know, Eastern, but, you know, Central Eastern Africa to New York is still 17 or 18 hours. It's a long trip.
I mean, what, Addis to Lagos is, what, five hours? I did a day trip on connecting in different places, and it's like, whoa, these are a lot longer than
And, like, Joburg, Newark is, like, 16, so.
Yeah, but for whatever, I don't know, I feel like Addis in my brain is just, like, should be so much closer because it's so much further north, but it's, in fact, the same distance.
Because it's much further east.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, like, Senegal is closer than you expect, and Addis is, quite a distance. Yeah. But I think the highest reliability of any airline I've ever been on for my flights is Ethiopian. I've flown, I don't know, like 40 something segments probably over time, and had like one be anywhere late. And it was because the airport in Chad had no electricity, and they still managed to get us out less than like 90 minutes delay with no systems, no communications. They figured it all out and still got us going.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
I like them, that I just don't want to spend 17 hours in a slopey seat business class if I'm paying for a business class ticket. But
I think it was their A350 when it first came out. I happened to be on it in the first like couple of weeks, and right where everybody naturally puts their elbow was the call button buzzer.
Ooh.
And the entire flight, Addis to Rome, was just ding, 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 ding. And it's like they said, the flight attendant said, until the pilots approve that we can disable it, we can't silence these darn things.
I think they copied the setup from Continental, right? The 77, the Continental United, the 772 did the same thing.
It's United on the old 77As.
Yeah. You would put your elbow down and immediately hit the call button.
Yeah. It was like the controller for the TV screen also had the call button in it or whatever. Yeah. Good times.
Emirates.
Yes.
Trolling Germany.
How often do you get an airline put out a press release saying, we would like to launch service in these markets, assuming the government would let us?
I mean, for those who don't know, there's been a longstanding cap on flights between destinations in the Middle East in Germany. So there's a cap on the carrier and the route. And Emirates has wanted to fly to other places in Germany. They get around some of this cap by putting A380s and things on the flight. But they want to fly to like Berlin and Stuttgart. And that's what they called out in this press release.
Yeah. I mean, Middle East to India is a similar problem. It's all these bilateral treaties. So Middle East to India is capped on the number of passengers. Some of them are total number of flights. And like Steven said, you can put an A380 on to get more bodies through, although these days, a well-configured 77W might get more people than a 380, just fewer premium.
You mean a poorly configured 77W.
There you go. Fair. Emirates doesn't do that so much. Anyway, it is very challenging, but it was just like, you know, Emirates Corpcom has an impressive cadence of like two or three releases a week. Doesn't matter if there has been news or not. There's always two or three things that come out. And some of it is like, we donated, you know, upcycled backpacks from old economy class seat covers to 200 countries, or about 200 because there aren't that many, but whatever. Some of it is silly stuff. And then like in the midst of all of that was this one of Emirates being like, oh, by the way, Germany, we would like to send more flights to you. Your people will benefit. Your economy will benefit. Please stop protecting Lufthansa at all costs. Thank you.
And to their credit, right? Lufthansa doesn't fly long haul from Berlin
or Stuttgart.
And they have to connect
with their Eurowings, whatever,
No long haul flying out of Brandenburg.
Okay.
Yeah, having no expertise in this, my assumption would be it'd be the type of thing where an airline like that would say, we want more frequencies at the biggest, busiest, richest airport, not the we want to fly to these, secondary, tertiary airports and have that be the blocker. But I guess the way the bilaterals doesn't solve for it.
Condor has Abu Dhabi and Dubai. Eurowings has Abu Dhabi, other Dubai, and Dubai. I'm looking at December.
Eurowings?
Yeah. I guess this is Discover is what they call their long haul ones.
Discover. Yeah.
The Eurowings in Sirium.
From Frankfurt or
Munich? From Berlin or Stuttgart is what I'm filtering on.
Okay.
United has Berlin. Yeah. Qatar has Doha. Interesting. Hainan has a Beijing flight.
But Lufthansa, nothing. Like, no mainline.
speaking of Cabo Verde, TUI Fly has a Cabo Verde flight to Boa Vista Island. Anyway, there are a handful of long-haul flights, but very few. And it's obvious. It's clear why Emirates wants to do this. They expect that they can poach a crap ton of traffic away from Lufthansa or anyone else because, you know, all of the other stuff feeding into Abu Dhabi and Dubai is for passengers just going there as opposed to the efficiency of, you know, those handfuls plus all the connecting traffic.
Not that any place has a shortage of German tourists, but Cabo Verde, a giant number. I was on a beach eating a soursop I bought from a farmer, and this very tall, very pale German in a very small Speedo came up and asked if he could try it for. And I was like, boy, there's a lot of Germans in the wild here.
Well, I mean,
you guys mentioned Condor Eurowings, so this is endlessly confusing to me. Some years ago, I show up at SeaTac Airport to board a flight, and the gate next to me is packed with an airline I've never heard of, Condor. So we've got Condor and then Lufthansa Group, and I think you just mentioned Eurowings, and Eurowings is the only Lufthansa Group that isn't Star Alliance, and then Condor has nothing to do with any of them. Is that roughly how it works?
Condor is its own airline, and Interlines.
Yeah. Condor at one point was, I feel like, used Miles and More, didn't it?
It did at one point.
Like a long time ago.
And then you guys covered all those legal cases the past few years of those two fighting about, I can't even remember now, the fair discrimination or something in the Germany court cases.
Yeah. There was a whole thing about Condor had a preferential rate. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that was my internet or yours. It's weird. Cool. Condor had preferential rates from Lufthansa Group for a bunch of fares, and then Lufthansa was like, yeah, maybe not anymore, and Condor had to cut a bunch of U.S. routes. San Antonio got cut. I think BWI got cut. Maybe some of it's coming back. It's hard to say. There were some lawsuits about that, though.
But Eurowings Discover is a Lufthansa subsidiary that's an ultra-low-cost carrier.
And it's not Star Alliance, and can you use anybody's miles and more for them? Any, like, United or any of those?
You can redeem your United miles on them, yeah.
For Eurowings, okay.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can earn.
No.
And I'm not sure if you can redeem for a standalone flight if it has to be tied to an onward connection, but I definitely did have a redemption that included them.
Because they operate a lot of, at one point they were operating basically Dusseldorf and Cologne for Lufthansa. So Lufthansa gave up on those two as hubs and was basically using the low cost carrier's ability to fly from there and transferring the passengers. So I don't think they still do that, but that's how it was for a while.
I know they do a bunch of anything to London other than Frankfurt or Munich is on Eurowings now.
Like a lot of the point-to-point stuff, yep.
Edelweiss, I forgot them.
Edelweiss, oh yeah, the Swiss.
The Swiss version of Eurowings.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm bitter. I discovered that Austrian charges for seat assignments on every single seat on the plane.
Which is crazy to me. Even if you call.
I didn't book it, because I didn't.
Yeah. Like, I made an Alaska booking for some friends.
Yeah,
on Aer Lingus, and went to you can't do online seat assignments. If you have to call, And I called, and the guy's like, oh, I can give you like 44 D through G for free. And I'm like, is that by the bathroom? And he's like, yeah, it's right next to the bathroom. I was like, I'll pay so that they're not seated right next to the restroom.
In the bathroom.
He's like, okay. And the prices weren't awful. It was surprising. Like, I think I paid $200 for four people or something, whatever. Yeah. But then I tried to do it through the website, like booking online, like a fresh new flight and select seats through the booking processes. And the seat prices were almost double during the booking flow, which I found interesting.
Which is funny, because usually they try to tease you with like, it's discounted now, it's going to always be more expensive later.
That's what I would think. Yeah.
Airline logic.
It is. Taipei. Let's talk about Taipei. Stefan, you mentioned that Taipei has become this gigantic hub for connecting traffic in a country that doesn't really exist, but it does exist. And I want to know what your experience has been going through there, because Foz and I have flown through there recently, semi-recently, and I want to know what your experience has been like.
Yeah, it's an interesting airport of like each kid came with their own erector set, and you know, I built this segment that looks like this, and then we bolted on this hallway that looks like this. But they have a lot of local cultural things, a lot of experiences. So it's not physically the most beautiful airport, but it's quite functional. You know, there's lots of sensible little things, like flights coming in from the U.S. You just go straight out into the terminal. You don't have the extra screening that, say, flights from some countries have, the agricultural extra screening on transits and that. So it's a very functional airport several times a year for the past several years, because for us now it's become the default way to get to Asia when, you know, so much flying to China hasn't resumed. Korean, you know, Asiana is going away, but flights to Korea, certainly from the West Coast, both in cash prices, I've found, are generally the highest for me out of Seattle. And those airlines have just stopped having functional partner relations for any kind of award purpose. Taipei has become, you know, let's just get there and then we can figure this out next. And the all three of the main airlines I enjoy very different experiences, all high quality. Amongst, I would say, they're amongst the highest quality airlines in the world, both economy, I fly long haul, business. EVA, I would say, is the the focus is like EVA. Their focus really is on the catering, is much more Chinese dishes, where Starlux focuses much more on Western service. They typically hire flight attendants that are often from Taiwan but have worked at an ME3 carrier, and focus on a more international, there's now a boba rivalry, because Starlux, their flights out of Taipei have had boba as an option, and China Airlines recently struck back adding boba, because they're the state-owned national carrier, so to speak. And they, in some people's eyes, they're the more stodgy, a bit more formal. But the connecting traffic, you see just tremendous amounts of passengers going to Philippines, going to Vietnam, certainly out of Seattle where I'm based. Those are two huge demographics. And anytime you talk about the U.S. midnight departures to Asia, you get some people that love them, some that hate them. But what I think is maybe underappreciated is as I said, like markets like Philippines and Vietnam, you have a huge number of senior citizens, elderly, wheelchair-bound passengers. And anecdotally, I get the impression that the idea that they arrive in Taipei at 5 a.m., they have their connection to Manila or whatever, and their family's meeting them in Manila at 10 a.m., compared to, say, taking some of the U.S. Airline afternoon departures and getting into a place like Manila at 11 p.m. or Bangkok at 1 a.m. I feel like that's a huge benefit. And for me and my wife traveling, even going to Japan, the idea that we can arrive, and be there mid-morning. The only way I've ever found to deal with jet lag, sort of, is just power through the first 2 days somehow and be miserable. And then, you know, not nap those 2 days. And, you know, something like Starlux recently added service to Kobe, Japan. We love Kobe and the air. Not that Osaka Kansai is inconvenient. It's a wonderful airport as well. But just plopping right down in Kobe and essentially walking to some of our favorite restaurants, even though it seems quite out of the way. And, you know, I don't, when you guys pull up your numbers and your, what is it, your Ceriums and your this and your that, I don't know how it's actually reflected, but I do know that a few weeks ago I connected in Hong Kong for the first time since February 2020, and gorgeous airport, and almost every gate was empty, deserted. This massive airport on the middle of a weekday, and Taipei is just brimming and bustling. And the, like to think that, say, Korea has decided they can only support one large airline and merging them away, you know, it just totally fascinates me. So that's why I'm curious your industry perspective of, you know, China Airlines, EVA, Starlux. My understanding from local aviation types is Taipei Airport essentially never gives subsidies to airlines to start service, that they're very hard line, many years practice. So I think they explained, like one guy with a lot of connection, he explained, like, Qatar has never come because they will not show up unless they get a subsidy somewhere. And so it seems like they're being run based on economic principles, but I don't know. And I'm curious what you all are actually seeing in the numbers, the traffic, the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think Foz and I have flown through there. Foz, you and I have been there a few times, haven't we?
Yes.
And I think the first time you and I went through, it was fairly quiet. Like it was the United. We were taking the United flight to San Francisco, and it was pretty chill.
But that flight gets in at like 7 p.m.
True. But then we took a flight coming back this just recently, and we took Ava to Singapore. Was that that trip? Yeah. And the airport was absolutely packed. Like, it was just slammed. And everything was, you know, every gate, everywhere we went was busy. So it was kind of a change for me. I think the Starlux thing, I don't know how viable they are long term. I think there's a lot of money invested in making them work. I just don't know that market shares there. Maybe people like you who find the convenience of the late night flight and connecting in Taipei to be pleasant will continue to fly. But I mean, you can fly to Narita or Haneda and get a connection down to Kobe. And some people want to do that. And
I'm surprised to hear you say that flying via Taipei to Japan is a reasonable thing. That's a long way out of the way, man.
Yes and no. So the specific to where I am in Seattle, if I'm looking at awards, especially premium cabin, it's a JAL flies to Narita, not Haneda. And so it's either the same price in miles, fly Delta to Haneda, an ANA award that all the brokers in China are squatting on and are impossible to get, or I fly JAL to Narita. And suddenly my connection to Kobe and to I think Sapporo is about the only one, and we love Sapporo. We go almost every year. That's about the only one that JAL flies out of Narita. So the domestic flying in Japan is incredibly functional and unsexy and bland. And, you know, depending between the Narita Haneda thing, it can take time. Now, if you look at the U.S. West Coast schedules, say for EVA, going there, the flights to Japan are timed incredibly well, and coming back, they're terrible. And so we do sometimes do want that minimum 8-9 hour connection, because we go into Taipei or Hsinchu for Costco and Decathlon and Carrefour and those, and do a lot of spice shopping and sports gear shopping. But the it only really works the one way. And then in some parts of Japan, of course, are quite far south. So Starlux and China Airlines both in the past year resumed or started, I think there were technically resumptions of services, China Airlines to Ishigaki, a snorkeling and shark diving destination very close to Taiwan. There's an intercontinental hotel and various other things. And then Starlux started Miyako Jima has a Hilton resort for Aspire card holders, and I went there and did a lot of turtle snorkeling. And those are much closer. But your point is going. Taipei is very far south. It if we're going to China and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was saying it makes me think of the Guam hub debate.
That would work.
Connections via Guam. Yeah.
And Japan is certainly out of the way. If you're going to China, and Starlux does not have rights or any flights to China, but we'll hop on a different airline. It's like an hour, 15 minutes flight to Ningbo and Zhejiang, slightly under 2 hours for Shanghai. So it isn't that much. And then there's the big question of sort of like when I was living on the East Coast, is a 7 to 9 hour flight better or worse than a 9 to 12 hour flight? And for me, Seattle, Tokyo route, economy's not that fun, and business class, I always feel like I shouldn't have bothered because you can eat or you can try to sleep, but I've had the flight be as short as 7 hours, and you pay in whatever form for business class. So I actually prefer the slightly longer Seattle to Taipei. If I'm in business class, then I can enjoy the full night. But economically, I arrived back in Seattle on a delayed flight from Minneapolis a couple of weeks ago, and there were two EVA planes, one Starlux, one China Airlines, all leaving within an hour of each other. I mean, that I learned a lot of lingo from you guys, a lot of Lyft. So how does it work for the industry?
Yeah. You are correct that the numbers are growing. I pulled up the Cirium data here. I would say Taipei is up 40% over where it was in 2019.
Hmm.
And a big chunk of that is Starlux, but it's also the CI is China Airlines is relatively steady. They haven't changed that much. Avar EVA is up significantly as well. They're up about 18%.
Can you look at how much Hong Kong has shrunk in that time?
It's actually bigger by number of flights.
But seats?
Seats, I will pull it up. I don't think it's shrunk, but I don't think it's grown. Certainly
I think it's shrunk because Cathay used to fly all 777-300s, right? Now they're all mostly 350-900s.
I don't want by air. Let me pull that out. Sorry. So looking back over the past 20 years, Hong Kong, you're right. It actually has shrunk since in both flights and in seats since 2019. Sorry, I got that. So it was 2018 was actually even better. It was 33,000 flights and 10 million seats. And it's now at 25,000 flights and 8 million seats for 26. So yeah, Hong Kong has suffered. There's no doubt. And part of that is, a lot of that is the China challenge. And part of it is like, it's become just from COVID, but part of it is like policies, politics, finances have become so much more intertwined with the mainland China government and economics. It's no longer the sort of freewheeling, standalone, but happens to be nearby kind of world that it was.
Yeah.
How much does Manila figure into this? Because that's another one you guys have been talking in recent episodes about U.S. Airlines starting service. When I'm on the Taiwan flights, and it wouldn't make sense unless you really wanted to go, a really cheap fare to go all the way to Hong Kong to connect back to Philippines coming from the U.S., except I just said I connect via Taipei to go to Japan. But, there's, of course, a tremendous global diaspora on the move of Filipinos, but, and I think rising economic clout.
Yeah.
Well, and I think geographically, right, Manila and Taipei are only 730 miles away from each other. So,
I think Manila question should really be answered in about 12 months, 18 months after Philippines joins One World, because that's going to change the shift.
The connection flow, you think, will move?
I think there'll be more traffic at that point.
Yeah. One of the challenges is, though, there's no space at the airport. Manila airport's full.
When has that ever stopped an airline? Well, hard stand it.
Also, the Philippines product is not great, and it varies differently, very differently between planes.
And is very economy class heavy.
Yes.
But increases passenger numbers, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Manila has grown a little bit, but not nearly as much as Taipei in the last 10 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever number range you want to look at. It is bigger. It's still smaller as an airport. I do agree, Foz. There's the potential for it to be a great, you know, connecting flow space. If they start pulling traffic away from Cathay, especially, if people avoiding Hong Kong.
There's clearly something going on in Manila, right? United is up to 2 flights a day on their largest plane, and Delta is eyeing it, right? And so I think Manila is going to see a surge in the next few years. And how they do it, I don't know. Maybe it's in the middle of the night flying when the airport's not so busy.
Well, it's interesting because Starlux, too, there was rumors that Starlux wanted to join Oneworld. And
I think it's very public. They've said they won't.
Yeah.
Reporting that one of the veto holders, hard to guess who, is blocking it?
Yes.
Reporting this week.
So to me, it's weird because they're very close together. And I think it would mean the end of Cathay as a Oneworld carrier, to be honest with you.
How far is Hong Kong from Manila?
Hong Kong is...
2-hour flights, 1,000 miles.
700 miles. They're almost there. It's like a triangle right there. They're all very close together.
I don't think it'd be the end of Cathay because there's still some finance in Hong Kong.
Mm.
Right. There's still
HSBC.
Yeah. Maybe even JPMC has a presence there. So, and some of the Chinese banks have substantial presences there as well. Bank of China, among others. So I don't think Hong Kong is going to go away, but I think Hong Kong is going to become more of an O&D place and less transit.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're going to China, because it's hard to get to China right now.
And it's easy to get through Hong Kong, get through China through Hong Kong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they've been just before COVID, they were picking up all the other Hong Kong airlines. There was Dragon Air and there was something else. They were trying to snap it all up and rolling it in. And they came out of COVID as like, screw it. We're not keeping all these different brands. Everything's now Cathay Pacific. We're done here. Cathay Dragon was right. And now it's just Cathay Pacific.
That I did notice how everything had disappeared when I was there last month. And the one brand.
Dragon is what we took up to Beijing, isn't it? Seth?
All those years ago, yeah.
At the time, that would have been all of the and at the time, actually, a lot of people liked their less fancy lounge better because it was more authentic dishes and less, you know, the dan-dan noodles that aren't dan-dan noodles and the noodle bar and that the Dragon Lounge was focused on, like, it was like a unrenovated cafeteria, but much more genuine.
We've been going long, so let's talk about Stefan, your event. You've got an event coming up. That's the reason he's on the show. Yeah.
Yes. And do it when everybody's tapped out. Cause we've been, roaming around the world, but my fascination with aviation and, I think it's not pejorative to say aviation geeks or av geeks and, you guys, I learned so much. And so I arranged the events called Points Travel Festival, Chicago Seminars. We changed the name this year to Points Travel Festival. I'm based in Seattle. Our Pacific Northwest event started in 2024. And this year, August 1st, 2026, we are coming to Stephen's home, Portland. And we are going to have the first ever in front of audience live taping of Dots, Lines, and Destinations, the three of you all. And rather than being a general purpose miles and points conference of many subjects, we're having two tracks. And one is aviation and headlined by you all. And then the other, because Portland zero sales tax is buying groups and all the stuff in your points hoarder days, you were not actually doing. So it will be an oil and water mix, but and I feel like the airlines are some of, and it's, I guess, deliberate, are some of the worst marketers of the fun and joy of flying that you guys have, and the extreme level of technical knowledge on IT system. I mean, Cloudflare or whatever, all of these things, CrowdStrike, they could all go down in like Foz alone could like run United Airlines for a few days until he finally needs to like, go to sleep. I mean, it's such incredible knowledge, and you know, Seth as well, this incredible technological knowledge. I may say political and moral courage to the extreme that I respect with Seth, and his from billboards to actually running and winning statewide office. So the you know, having you guys, having aviation subjects, you know, and I feel like a lot of travelers, I just said, I haven't been in Hong Kong airport since February 2020. And I even studied in Hong Kong at Chinese University of Hong Kong on an exchange. And the one thing I'll sometimes ask travelers is which airport in the world, when the jet bridge, when the plane door opens, you step on the jet bridge, you hit that gust of air, like which sense of air do you totally recognize? Do you just start beaming and smiling? And I'm actually not that big of a flying person as far as the aircraft types and that, but I know in Hong Kong and Minneapolis where I grew up and Shanghai where I lived, when that gust of air from the jet bridge comes and I've arrived and the magic of the flying and that. So that's part of the, you know, years ago, you guys recorded at the Freddy's in a sauna to no audience, and now we're going to bring you in front of a live crowd, going to record, celebrate things, aviation, tech, tools, industry stuff, yeah. more guests coming along the way. So it's pointstravelfestival.com and ticketing page on Eventbrite. And this is also an outgrowth of our Washington State, Oregon State, and British Columbia called PNW Points Meetup Group, which is very active. We just had a big family picnic yesterday. And so this event, although the main Saturday, August 1st, is a conference and party, the Friday we do have optional add-on Peninsula Park, Portland, a family-friendly picnic where many of our local members bringing spouses and partners and kids. It's very much a community summer party. Now that I've been in this region almost a decade, I have learned through prior difficult event experiences that in summer, cruise ships go to Seattle and Vancouver, BC, and they do not go to Portland. And rates for travel, accommodation, again, no sales tax. Portland in summer is spectacularly beautiful. We're going to do as much outside as we can. You know, really a great fit, and very much look forward to
having you. Is there a swimming pool at this facility?
There is a swimming pool, actually. There's a public pool there, yes.
Yeah, was a history. There's a period in which there was the pool sessions. I don't know if you guys remember this. And I would, like, while everybody else was doing regular stuff inside and, like, microphones and whatever, I would go sit out of the swimming pool and, like, be sunbathing and just sit there with a drink and talk to whoever wanted to talk about points and miles.
That, we may have that. There's many, I think Portland has its share of park bench long-term residents as well to chat with. It is, the venue is the Hyatt Regency Portland. The full name is Hyatt Regency Portland at Oregon Convention Center, which is on the MAX light rail line from the airport. Guests that stay there get a free transit pass for the weekend. Well, it's part of the destination fee, which globalists don't pay. So for the points audience, the only thing they actually care about of any kind of meetup, conference, and event is it at a Hyatt? And I think that holds true for even post devaluation. And I can put on the record that I have tried to communicate to the ownership, management, everybody of the hotel, what globalist breakfast will mean when we're there. And so far they have shown no interest, understanding, or, you know, comprehension of what will befall them, but we're not starting the Saturday conference until 10 a.m. because we know everybody will be. I've stayed at the property. It's very nice. Very convenient. The light rail is just truly outside the door. And Stephen, feel free, of course, you're the actual local to fill in some local color.
Yeah, if people come to the picnic, I'll be on the cargo bike probably. So you can check out a cargo bike if you want to see one. I'll probably have my kiddo with me on the back, so you can.
Can I ride that the basket?
You can fit in the back if you want. It's probably not going to be comfortable. I might have the new bike by then.
Is yours the rear basket cargo? Or is it the front?
I have a long tail, yeah. So it's
okay.
You could ride with Brendan and
did you see that video the other day of a guy who missed his bus and an e-bike with the front cargo bike? It was like, the guy started running, the guy with an e-bike pulled up next to him, like, he's like, "You're trying to catch the bus?" Like, yeah, it's like, "Hop in." And they beat the bus to the around the corner to the next stop, and the guy got out and got on the bus.
That's great. I love it.
And as a courtesy to all registered attendees, we will find some semi-confidential way to share what flights these three gentlemen will be on, because those, unless you want to be on delayed flights, they have the highest gain. You guys mentioned San Francisco to Taipei. That's like episode 296, you know, many more hours of delays and Faz arguing with San Francisco gate agents on how to do their job.
That's what we referenced, because Faz and I tried to go to Taipei a third time, and I just ended up turning around and going home because it got so delayed.
Stefan's dropping episode numbers in here. It's pretty great.
Yeah, that one is just totally out of my mind. You know, it's somewhere in the middle. The counting is very fuzzy, and we haven't decided what episode number we'll make it special.
It'll be episode number 600.
We will figure out a way to,
from HBC, but it'll be episode 600.
What were you going to say, Faz? Was that the one?
You missed the flight? They pushed back, and we came back to the gate.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then they wouldn't let me take the seat to go out. And so then you did a trip in vain.
Yeah.
Good times.
Lifetime global services is no reaccommodation, no protection, no no priority.
Giant middle finger.
This is pre-global services, but yeah.
Anyway, come hang out
with us in Portland.
Yes, come hang out. Yes. And for our Patreon supporters, stick around. We've got a little bit of a giveaway for you. If you stick around for that. Thanks, Stefan, for joining us. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.